Well, hello and a very warm welcome to The Sweet Spot. It's your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by The Racing Post. I'm James Mason, and once again, I'm glad to say I'm joined by Steve Palmer. Now, I've switched seats this week from tipster to presenter. We will discuss last week's action shortly and how the tips went on. But before previewing the tournaments on offer this week, we've got the Texas Open on the PGA Tour, and also LIV Golf is back with the Miami Invitational. Now, as always, we love bringing you this show, so please like, subscribe, share, and comment. It's great to hear your views and thoughts on what we have been discussing. And before we get into a review of last week, though, firstly, welcome back, Steve. Are you refreshed and ready to go?
Thank you, James. Yeah, refreshed is certainly not what I am. It's a very, very busy week off. It started off relaxed. Played some golf at Wentworth at the start of the week. Doing a bit of early research for the BMW PGA. John Terry was in the group in front. Gladstone Small was in the group behind. So met some of my heroes. It was great to see Gladstone Small in action. And then we got a new dog at the weekend. So new dog at the weekend. Coco has arrived. She's outside there, so I'm hoping she stays quiet for the duration of this podcast. And then watched a lot of football. There's a I'd rather spend 30 minutes talking about football here, James, but I know I'm not allowed to do that. But it was a crazy week for Weymouth FC, and we were absolutely robbed yesterday against Yeovil. But let's get through the golf first, see if we've got any time for that later.
Well, yeah, I was about to ask, actually, have you been able to get out and swing the clubs? But of course, you've been to Wentworth and rubbing shoulders with celebrities as well. How do you get that?
No, I've got a good friend at Wentworth who allows me to go and play there whenever I want. It's fantastic. Basically, the only golf I ever play is at Wentworth, which is great, isn't it? I don't bother playing anywhere else. I never have time hardly ever to play golf. But yeah, Wayne Mardle's in our group, and John Terry. I mean, I'm a Chelsea fan, so it was nice to see John Terry, and then Gladstone Small. I mean, you must remember him from you like cricket, don't you?
I mean, a little bit, yeah.
He's a real character. So, the golf was good. The dog, is really hard work settling the dog in. And the football, you just don't want to get me started on that. Weymouth Yeovil abandoned after 77 minutes with Weymouth 1-0 up. Don't get me started on that.
Let's get into a review of last week's action then. And of course, the tips of the closest that we came in the Houston Open, it would have been Sahith Theegala, but never quite got going, really. But it was won by Stephen Yeager. First victory on the PGA Tour. He was prolific on the Corn Ferry, where he won six times. But he made his breakthrough now with 136th attempt. So it's taken him a while, but he did so in some of the most impressive fashion as he held off the most informed player in golf right now in Scotty Scheffler. What did you make of Yeager's performance?
Yeah, it was such a congested leaderboard, wasn't he? Yeah, fell over the line in front, really. I mean, that birdie putt on 17 was really unconvincing, wasn't it? I thought he was going to blow it at that point. He had a good short birdie putt on the 71st hole. And it was such a poor stroke. I thought, oh, blimey, he's feeling the jitters here. But in the end, it was nine consecutive back nine pars that won in the tournament. So it really, it was a real grind on that back nine. But the back nine is much tougher than the front nine at Memorial Park. You've got to make your score early, then hang on. And it's exactly what he did. Scotty Scheffler is the big talking point of the tournament, isn't it? I mean, Stephen Yeager, he couldn't believe that Scheffler missed that putt on the last hole. But 34 years of age, Jay. You don't often get PGA Tour breakthrough at such a ripe old age.
Have you, Scheffler obviously mentioned there that was such an informed player, had back-to-back victories before this tied second. I mentioned last week that he may not have been sort of fully focused on trying to win this tournament. It was just keeping himself ticking along, obviously, until the Masters. But the slight, maybe not a little bit of a worry with Scheffler, was his two worst rounds were when the putter went cold, really. If he had putted as well as he had the past 2 weeks, he probably would have walked that tournament. Is that a slight worry for you, that his putter went a little bit hot and cold?
He said he misread that putt on the 72nd hole. I thought it lacked a bit of pace. It was a bit of a dribble, wasn't it, and went left. But it wasn't the 72nd hole that cost Scheffler. It was much earlier in the tournament. I mean, did you see the end of round two? He closed with a three putt from 5 feet on the 18th hole. Just lost his head for a moment, lost his focus. So a double bogey at the end of round two. And then he spun his ball off the green at the 15th in round three. Wasn't that bad a shot, but just ripped it with spin into the water. So another double bogey. So a double bogey Friday, a double bogey Saturday. So the 72nd hole was not the key. But yeah, despite those card busters, he only loses the tournament by a shot. Generally, he was excellent. His ball striking was excellent. He was the 37th best putter in the field of those who made the cut. And that has been enough. Yeah, that was enough to win tournaments for him. So 37th best putter is fine. If he continues to be mid-division of those who make the cut, it will still win plenty of tournaments. So fine margins. But yeah, I just wish he hadn't bothered playing because I didn't see the upside to playing. I mean, he was well up for it, James. You mentioned whether he was just ticking himself over. It's as angry as I've seen him for ages last week. He was infuriated at certain moments. He had a little spat with Ted Scott about how they should have laid up short of one of the par fives and had an easy chip rather than they ended up long on the green and it was a difficult and they ended up three putting. So motivation was definitely there. He never just goes through the motions, but that's why I didn't want him to play in that because. I just felt everything was in such good order, just rest up for the Masters. I think it was a negative playing last week, a slight Masters negative because of those two putting rounds you mentioned. He had two great putting rounds, two bad putting rounds, terrible putting rounds. But one of the bad ones was on the Sunday, which is obviously, you know, can leave you with a sour taste in your mouth. I think it was a shame for Scheffler Master backers, but he's still the emphatic Masters favourite.
Yeah. Any backers for Scheffler last week as well, with a short price he was, would have been disappointed. But he was very nonchalant about that missed putt on his end of his second round because that stopped his record streak as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was 28 rounds of par under, wasn't it? And then he missed that and a little bit disappointed. But it's something where I think he'll be able to brush it off. But you mentioned Scheffler, hot and cold with the putter. Was there anyone else that kind of stuck out for you? I mean, Tony Finau was one I looked at because he finished one back, his best finish of the year. If he could have putted, he would have walked that tournament.
It's heartbreaking watching Tony Finau, isn't it? Because we all love Tony Finau. He's one of the nicest men on the planet. But that putting is just awful. His ball striking was amazing last week. So, it pains me to see Tony Finau. I don't think you can back a player putting that badly. So he wouldn't be on my Masters radar. And the fella he had a spat with is the one I want to talk about. Do you see Tony Finau? Well, not a spat. Tony Finau doesn't have a spat with anyone. But Alessandro Tosti. Let's talk about Alessandro Tosti, who obviously has a great name. But he's just a born entertainer. I love this boy. You know, he grew up in poverty on the mean streets of Rosario. And I think potentially, I don't want to overplay this. In terms of character, we could have the new Thevi Blathiroth on our hands here. You know, he's got Sevi characteristics. He's got a real flair. He's entertaining. He's fierce. He says he's not there to make friends. And he had a suspension last year on the Korn Ferry Tour. He was suspended for a month on the Korn Ferry Tour last year for various misdemeanors. He's got a real angry way about him on the golf course. There was a quote after last week's tournament where he said, or during it, he said, I live in my blood. I don't know what that means. I mean, you tell me if you can work that one out. I guess he means he's like a hothead. I think he's saying he's a hothead rather than a vampire. But great college player, University of Florida. You know, as I say, he's emerged from poverty. I love sort of rags to riches stories, and hopefully this is going to become one now. You know, he finished runner-up last week for those who haven't been following Alessandro Tosti. And I just can't wait to watch him again. And I think PGA Tour need this, James, because PGA Tour gets quite boring, doesn't it? You know, a lot of the big characters have gone onto the live circuit. There aren't many characters left on the PGA Tour, I'd say. And I think Tosti is just a breath of fresh air. You know, he could be very interesting. He's even got a trademark celebration, James. Don't know if you noticed last week, he celebrated it on Sunday, a key putt on Sunday with a bum shake.
A bum shake.
Bring back the bum shake. You know, it's quite a prolonged bum shake. And Seve used to like the odd bum shake. I think if that becomes a trademark celebration, like Chesson Hadley's got the finger flick. Alessandro Tosti, if his celebration is the bum shake, then we're all going to want to watch that.
I mean, that'll be blowing up on Twitter, as they say. It'll be going viral there. The old
blowing off on Twitter, yes.
But we'll move on then from the Houston Open. Of course, one more was Wyndham Clark, had a slight back injury last week, but yes, he said he was okay with it, didn't he?
It closed with a 66, didn't he? Yeah, when I first tuned in last week and they were talking about Wyndham Clark's back, I thought, blimey, this is the last thing he needs with the Masters on the horizon. But when he closed with a 66, I think that can alleviate those concerns. But he obviously will rest up for Masters now. He'd take it easy, wouldn't he?
Yeah, very good. And on to the Indian Open. I mean, I have to apologise to Steve here, because ahead of doing this, he said, let's do the Indian Open first, then the Houston Open. And it just went straight over my head and I threw him a curveball straight away. But
that's all right, yeah. Chronological order. It really unsettles me. I've done well to survive that.
Yeah, he handled it wonderfully, like a true pro. But the Indian Open, won by Keita Nakajima, another sort of first-time winner at the elite level, made in DP World Tour win. He had won four times on the Japan Golf Tour before this, three times last year. He had a little wobble at the end of the final round, but it was pretty much a procession for him, really. Won by four strokes. He's now got his sights set on a PGA Tour card, he says. But what did you make of the performance? Because from last year, when scoring was so, so difficult, actually scoring this year was much better. Do you think that was just course of setup easier, or the players have got the hang of it more?
Yeah, maybe a bit of both. I mean, there were still some card busters. There was loads of withdrawals, wasn't there? I mean, Rasmus Højgaard, I mean, he had a couple of absolute disaster holes, which is, you know, that course lends itself to, and then withdrew. You had loads of people quitting early. Yeah, there wasn't injuries or illness. It was just despair. So, that course can do that to you. But yeah, Keita Nakajima, what a player. What a glorious future he's got. I mean, if Jack Reeve was here, he'd guide you through his wonderful amateur career. He was world number one amateur for 87 weeks. As Jack well knows, you do not become world number one amateur without having plenty of game. And now he's only 23 years of age and his pro career taking off, as you say, prolific in Japan. Loads of runner-up finishes to go with those four wins. Just always contends. He won't need to play much on the Japan Tour now. The DP World Tour is going to give him a route to the PGA Tour. I mean, I talk about Tom McKibben getting one of those 10 cards that you get from the Race to Dubai to get on the PGA Tour card. Tom McKibben, last time I was backing him as if defeat was out of the question, then I tuned in and he had tonsillitis. The first shot I saw, Richard Boxall talking about Tom McKibben's tonsillitis. So that was pretty heartbreaking. But I think Tom McKibben will get onto the PGA Tour through the top 10 in the RTD. And then I think Keita Nakajima will do likewise. You know, he's good enough to be on the PGA Tour. PGA Tour set up to be ideal for him. He's got loads of power. He's, he's a little pocket battleship. He could be the next Hideki Matsuyama and become a prolific stateside champion.
Bold claims. Was there anything else you took away from the tournament? I mean, you mentioned that the card busters there was a 92 that was carded, unfortunately. That beat the 91 from the previous year. So it shows that there are big scores on every hole. I mean, you mentioned Højgaard there. I think it was a 9 he hit, wasn't it? He drove into the water and then his head went with draft around one. But anybody else that either caught your eye for positives or negatives?
I think you're absolutely right. That course, you've got to have the right temperament for that course. And, Keita Nakajima has proven that now, hasn't he? I mean, if he can win on a course like that, which is not entirely ideal for him, I think he's going to make merry on the PGA Tour. He's world number 78 now. Yeah, I don't want to talk about anyone else, Charlie. He's the man to talk about. I don't think you can overhype him enough. He's world number 78 now, and I think he's going to rise. He's going to rise. I think he could overtake Hideki Matsuyama in time if Matsuyama's brittle body continues to cause problems.
How much, just before we go into looking at the two tournaments this week, how much do you look into world rankings at the moment? Because we know there's a lot being said about live golfers saying they don't look at the world golf rankings because they're maybe not a true reflection of what's going on in some of the best players. However, I think it was Anirban Lahiri said that ahead of the Indian Open, then he missed the cut. It's like, well, fine, if you're going to say that, you've got to back it up. But then if you don't back it up and you miss the cut, but how much do you actually sort of look into the world rankings in terms of if you're looking at a player?
Well, the LIV boys are obviously furious about what's going on. they knew exactly what was going to happen. You know, Greg Norman potentially put them away by suggesting they were going to get world ranking points. But the amount of sort of queening going on about it now, I find it quite annoying. Did you see the withdrawals for the Olympics? You've had Brooks Koepka and various others. I think, but yeah, is Tyrrell Hatton confirmed yet? There was rumours that Tyrrell Hatton was going to pull out from the Olympics, you know, to rule himself out from the Olympics, because that's based on world ranking. So yeah, they're probably not going to get in the Olympics, so they're just making a big scene about it now. Yeah, I find it all very unsavory. Yeah, obviously we know that the world rankings are skewed at the moment against the LIV players, and I obviously don't take huge stock in them, but yeah, they still have some value. And I just think it's nice to see Kaito Nakajima where he belongs. Yeah, I've been excited about this lad for a long time, and yeah, I'm expecting big things.
Very good. That is the review then of the two tournaments from last week. Let's move swiftly on to the two tournaments that we have this week on the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. But we'll start with the PGA Tour because it's the Texas Open. It's the final chance for quite a lot of players in the field to try and get the victory that will earn them that last spot at the Masters at Augusta National. But tell us a little bit about where we are this week, Steve, and what the course is like.
Yes, the Oaks course. TPC San Antonio in Texas, 7,438 yards, par 72, four par fives, a Greg Norman design. It's been used for this event since 2010, but had a redesign before the 2018 edition, so form after that more relevant. We've also had a Korn Ferry Tour event here, a one-off, the 2020 TPC San Antonio Championship. We've got 1-4-4 going to post. Going to be sunny for 2 days, cloudier at the weekend, breezy on Friday afternoon and Saturday afternoon. So keep your eye out for the tee times. Ideally, you want a late, early draw over the first 2 days.
Very good. Let's just look at some prices before we get into Steve's selections. And at top of the billing is Rory McIlroy at around 10-1, which, you know, for tournaments that he's been going into, that could be a decent price for some. Ludvig Åberg then comes in at 12-1. Jordan Spieth and Hideki Matsuyama, that Steve mentioned earlier, 20-1. Colin Morikawa, Max Homer, Corey Connors, they're all at 28. Matt Fitzpatrick, 28-1. Alex Noren at 30-1. And then the rest higher in the betting. How many selections do you have for this one, Steve?
Four. And I have a very small puppy outside there. There's very sensitive ears. I can't do anything too crazy. I'm sure you understand.
I do indeed. I was waiting for the big four if you're going for that, but no, that's fine.
Puppy comes first.
What is the headline selection?
It's Corey Connors. Corey Connors at 25-1, who is gunning for a TPC San Antonio hat trick this week. He made his PGA Tour breakthrough in the 2019 Texas Open. He was 20 under par for that event. It was a sensational performance, having Monday qualified for the event. Then he won again last year with a 15 under par total. Connors must feel 10 feet tall when he arrives at the Oaks course, and he's found form at the perfect time to get this hat trick. He's been steady all season, but he stepped up a gear in his last two starts. 18th place at Bay Hill, followed by 13th place in the Players' Championship. He carded three rounds of 68 at Sawgrass. He's got that trademark ball-striking solidity back at an ideal time. And that breeze in the forecast on Friday and Saturday, I want a nice greens and regulation machine like Connors on my side. He was world number 473, James, when he made his Texas Open debut in 2018. Yet he finished 26th, so he showed an immediate liking to the track. His full form figures at this course: 26, 1, 14, 35, 1. So, yeah, I see him as watertight each way investment in a weak event.
Very good. Connors is the headline selection at number two.
Alexander Noren, 33-1, is out there, still awaiting his PGA Tour breakthrough at the age of 41. I mean, we saw Jager make his breakthrough at 34 last week. Yeah, it's an outrage that Noren has not won on the PGA Tour. He's a 10-time champion on the DP World Tour. He was on the winning Ryder Cup team in 2018. So he's looking for the icing on the cake of a wonderful career. And the Texas Open looks a fine opportunity to me. He made his debut at the Oaks course last year and finished 15th. So clearly like the layout, I think it's going to be on his schedule forevermore. He's also excelled in Texas in the WGC match play, Austin, you know, which is now defunct, but he was a quarter finalist in 2017. He was third in 2018. And now he arrives in the Lone Star State again, full of beans. He's been playing well for 10 months, pretty much, James. But in the last month, he's finished ninth in the Cognizant Classic, 19th at Sawgrass, and 11th last week in Houston. And nobody outscored him over the weekend in Houston last week. He closed with 66-65. So I think all the pieces have come together for Alexander Noren. Massive chance for, and we'd all be delighted for him because, it's an outrage that he hasn't won on the PGA Tour. You might remember that Farmers Insurance Open where JB Holmes slowed him down when he was on the brink of victory there. So, come on, Alex. Come on, son.
Yeah, that staggers me that Noren, like you said, still hasn't broken that PGA Tour duck. A good player, and everything you mentioned there makes him a good selection. So there, the first two, then Connors and Noren at number three.
Yeah, two at bigger prices now, and they're both 80-1 chances. And the first one is Kyung-Hoon Lee, KH Lee to his friends, a two-time PGA Tour champion. Both of those victories have come in Texas. Both Byron Nelsons. He won the 2021 Byron Nelson, 2022 Byron Nelson. He played in the 2022 President's Cup. You know, everything looked so rosy for KH Lee at that point. But his form dipped. He dropped from world number 33 to world number 100. But from the Cognizant Classic onwards, there's been some hugely encouraging signs for, you know, that the old KH Lee is back. He finished fourth in that Cognizant Classic. Then he was ninth in the Valspar Championship, 31st last week in Houston, was another decent effort. He carded weekend rounds of 68, back-to-back 68s. Two of his three starts at the Oaks course have resulted in a top 25 finish. So, well worth chancing at a healthy price.
Yeah, he's a very good player in the wind, isn't he, KH Lee? So he controls the shots very well.
Yes,
I like that one. So that was one 80-1 shot. What's the fourth and final pick?
It's Davis Riley, who burst back into form last week. Obviously regular fans will know how much I like Davis Riley, and he's been in a bit of a dip, but there were some encouraging signs recently, and then last week we've had compelling evidence that Riley is back. Rounds of 65, 71, 71, 65, finished 14th in the Houston Open. He's gone back to basics, he's gone back to his old coach, and this week he's going back to a course where he won his second Korn Ferry Tour title in 2020. He won that one-off TPC San Antonio Championship. He won a PGA Tour pairs event last year, Zurich Classic with Nick Hardy. I think it's time he's going to threaten for a maiden PGA Tour individual title this week. Yeah, the signs are too... it's just too tempting. I can't resist it. I know the flack will come in because everyone thinks I'm a Davis Riley loyalist, and he could have one arm and I'd still be backing him. But I think the time has come.
I mean, it would be terrible if he does win and you're not on him. That was what I always had with Lee Westwood, was backing him to win a major. And while he got place money, he always fell short. But every year I thought, if I don't back him and he does win it, I'm going to be absolutely big sick. So Davis Riley is certainly a talent. So I don't disagree with your selection. You've decided to steer away from those players at the top of the market then. And is that purely sort of McIlroy, Åberg, Matsuyama, Spieth, because you feel their thoughts are going to be on next week at Augusta?
Well, certainly McIlroy. I mean, how can his thoughts not be on next week? I mean, he's obsessed with the Masters. And the more he tells you he's not obsessed with the Masters, the less you believe him. Obviously, his career is built around next week's tournament, isn't it? It will define him. He'll say it won't define him. It'll define him. I just feel like it's impossible for Rory McIlroy to not be thinking about the Masters. And, he'll probably even try shots this week during competition in preparation for the Masters. You know, he might be playing these high draws that he's going to need next week at Augusta when they don't fit the shape of the hole for the Oaks course, but he just knows he needs to get that muscle memory and the reps in. So I just don't see how you can play a short price on a player that is that distracted. If you said to him, you shoot 150, miss the cut in Texas and then win the Masters, he obviously accept. And it's not for me. I mean, Ludwig Åberg, much more tempting. He's making his majors debut next week, but I think he's in Texas to win. He'd be more focused, but again, I just think 10-1 McIlroy, 12-1 Åberg, Yeah, with that potential draw bias I mentioned, I don't want to be playing at really short prices. I'll avoid the top two.
I mean, are you surprised, before we touch on the on Live Golf next, are you surprised McIlroy's actually teed it up?
Absolutely, Joe. I don't think it's a good idea. He's tried everything. You know, the build up to the Masters, he's tried everything. You know, his plan this year was to play loads of golf, loads of tournaments. He just tries to change his approach each season to get that elusive green jacket. If I was one of his advisors, I wouldn't be playing the week before. I mean, if you want to distract yourself, you don't need to play golf to distract yourself. You know, find something else to do. Go surfing. I don't know. But I think it's a poor move. But I wish him well. We obviously all want to see him win a green jacket. We can't all get a green jacket. But I think he's not for me at 10-1, James.
Very good. So that is the PGA Tour event, the second tournament taking place. We're back with Live Golf. It's the Miami Invitational, fifth event of the season. It's the first since Hong Kong. That was when Abraham Anser claimed the spoils, that three-man playoff. He beat Cameron Smith and Paul Casey, when you probably wouldn't have had Anser at the top of those three to win the tournament, but he came through and won it. But Miami Invitational, where are we off to? What's the course like? Is it going to be a bit of a monster?
Yes, it is. Trump National Doral, Miami, Florida. 7,701 yards, par 72, four par fives. The famous Blue Monster, as you alluded to there, was a PGA Tour stop for many years. Then we had the WGC Cadillac Championship there from 2007 to 2016. Jill Hance remodeled the layout in 2014, made it tougher. And then Live Golf arrived with their team championship in 2022 and 2023. So this was the Live curtain closer in the previous two seasons. But now it's become a regulation stop on the Live circuit. We've got a field of 54 going to post, 54 holes of stroke play. Starts at 6:15 p.m. UK time on Friday, live on DAZN and Live Golf Plus app. Clear, calm and pleasant for the most part. Bit of breeze on Sunday.
Very good. Let's just look at some prices before we get your selections for this one. Top of the bill is John Rahm, like he mostly is going into these tournaments now. He's 13-2. Wacky Neiman, who has been the man of the moment on Live Golf this season, he's 15-2. Bryson DeChambeau then comes in at 10-1. Cameron Smith and Dustin Johnson are both 14-1. Tyrrell Hatton at Brooks Koepka and Taylor Gooch. Gooch, who was the man of the moment last season on Live Golf, they're all 16-1. And then it's at high prices for the rest. How many selections are we going for this, Steve?
Just two.
Just two. Very good. I suppose limited field, but I like it. Who is the headline pick?
It's Dustin Johnson. 16-1 is out there for Dustin Johnson. I think that's a fantastic price. He's playing a home game. He lives in Florida. He says he loves Doral. He likes the redesign from Jill Hance. He approved of them. And it showed on the golf course. He won the WGC Cadillac Championship in 2015. He finished fourth the year prior, 2014. And then he was 14th on his title defense in 2016. So massively course proven in comparison to many others this week, particularly the favorite. And in the inaugural Live Miami Team Championship at Doral in 2022, Johnson held his nerve down the stretch to win that competition for his team, the Four Aces. It was a really good event, to be fair. It was really entertaining. It became a sort of duel between Dustin Johnson and Cameron Smith for the team honours. And DJ did the business for the Four Aces. So he's produced the goods under maximum pressure down the stretch on this course on the PGA Tour and a WGC and in the team championship. And I suspect he's in the right mood to deliver a pre-Masters reminder of how good he is. There'll be a few of the big egos in Miami this week looking to remind the world going into the Masters that, you know, I'm a contender. And I think Johnson will have his game face on this week. He's obviously got a green jacket in his wardrobe. He knows he can win next week. I think he could potentially do the double. He won the last Live event that was in the States, Live Las Vegas. Didn't make an impact in Jeddah or Hong Kong, but he had an ice cold putter in Jeddah. He didn't actually play that badly. He suffered on the greens. Hong Kong wasn't an ideal layout for him. So back in the States, I'm expecting big noise from DJ this week.
Yeah, there's quite a few of the players in LIV Golf that have those coveted green jackets, but Dustin Johnson, the headline pick, the second and final pick.
It's Bryson DeChambeau at 10 to 1, who will also feel that, you know, LIV Golf Miami can be a springboard to, you know, a spectacular back-to-back successes. You know, he's obviously exempt for next week. He won the US Open in 2020, so he's in the Masters field. And not long ago, Not long ago, Bryson DeChambeau was going off favourite for the Masters, wasn't he? I can't quite remember. Was it 2 or 3 years ago? He was favourite for the Masters. And, you know, he'll go to the Masters really fancying his chances. His game is in great order. He finished fourth in Jeddah. He finished seventh in Hong Kong. Neither of those courses are as good a fit for him as Miami and Augusta. And he was also on the winning team in the LIV Golf Team Championship in 2023. So I'm backing the two players who were the winning captains in the LIV Golf Team Championship in the previous 2 years. So Dustin Johnson won with four aces in 2022. Bryson DeChambeau led crushers to victory last year. So they both like Doral. And I mean, the last time, we must mention, the last time Bryson DeChambeau won on the PGA Tour was in Florida, in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You probably remember that one because he did some spectacular things en route to winning that, you know, driving greens that had never been driven before, the 2021 Arnold Palmer. So back in Florida this week, I think a third LIV title entirely feasible. So yeah, two-pronged attack on LIV Miami.
Yeah, DeChambeau at the end, that was the big celebration, wasn't it? When he over the water and then went like that. And then Westwood teed off with him and he teed off behind him, knocked it down the fairway, and then Westwood went, there we go.
That's it. Yeah,
knew that they would have been. But I seem to remember DeChambeau at the Masters when he went in favourite. Ahead of it, he said something along the lines of he was going to try and overpower the courses, and he says he should be shooting a 65 at Augusta, you know, regularly. And then it went wrong for him, and everyone went, well, that's what happens when you basically think you can overpower Augusta.
Yeah, I mean, it all went wrong for him. He was obsessed with length back then. He thought length was the key to everything. He's actually calmed down since, you know, he's taken a lot of the bulk out. He's concentrating more on health. So, yeah, the DeChambeau.
He's not a sort of shouldery up there, is he now? He was very sort of, how he walked around. And now it's come down a little bit, hasn't it?
It has. And he had issues with his nose. He had some issues with his nose. He wasn't getting enough oxygen up his nose, apparently. So he had a little operation on his nose. He's calmed down on all the crazy diet stuff. So I like the Bryson DeChambeau now more than I did back then. I wasn't on him for that Masters. I opposed him with Dustin Johnson, if I remember rightly. But I think that the DeChambeau now is ready for big things. And if he keeps getting in these majors, I mean, he's exempt until 2025, isn't he? Because of that US Open success. So he's still a threat in the majors. He did well in the USPGA last year. So, yeah, sorry, we're doing what Rory McIlroy's doing. We're getting ahead to next week. I think DeChambeau is a runner. I think both of my LIV Golf Miami players are big runners for next week. But let's take each week as it comes, which Rory McIlroy will be struggling with.
Indeed. You've decided to swerve John Rahm and Joachim Niemann. Is that just too short in the betting, or do you fancy them?
Well, John Rahm, I think, will be keen to play well because, you know, he's going into his Masters title defence as a LIV Golf maiden, unless he wins this week. And, you know, nobody would have expected that. You know, he would have expected to have won by now, but he's faded out of contention in every single LIV appearance he's had. They've all been exactly the same. He's banging it, and then late doors, he fades. It's been pretty embarrassing for him. I think he's got a lot on his mind. You know, the defending champion at the Masters has a lot of official duties, don't they? I was reading that he's already been getting some question marks about his menu for next week. Did you see that? Dustin Johnson said he's never heard of any of them.
Yeah, I don't know what all this stuff is.
Yeah. Dustin Johnson's probably going to refuse to eat the dinner because he doesn't know what any of it is. But yeah, I think Rahm's obviously got distractions. But the key point is he's never competed at Doral. You know, his PGA Tour career started later than your Dustin Johnson's. And he hasn't played in any of those team championships, of course, because he's only just joined. So, yeah, Rahm, I think 13 to 2 is a short price, given lack of course experience. Niemann 8 to 1 is tempting. But, yeah, he's never done much in Florida. He never did much in Florida on the PGA Tour. I don't think this is an ideal track for him. I like backing Niemann in breezy tournaments. And there's not much wind in the forecast. No, I can live without both of them.
Very good. Those are the two selections then. Let's just do a quick recap of what we've gone through for the two events that are happening, starting on the PGA Tour then, Steve. The Texas Open, your four selections.
Corey Connors, Alexander Noren, Kyung Hoon Lee, Davis Riley.
And on to LIV Golf, the Miami Invitational. Two selections, they are?
Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau.
Very good. Well, thank you, as always, Steve. Before we go, though, of course, there's plenty of stuff that we'll be having next week of the Masters coming up, start of the major season. But how sort of are you looking forward? How much are you looking forward to this? I mean, last year it felt like it was LIV against the rest of the golfing world. Obviously, John Rahm won for the rest of the golfing world. Now he's LIV. Is it even more a sort of battle between those two sort of rivals?
It's a good question. I suppose it is, yeah, because they've got more chance of winning this time, haven't they, with John Rahm. Yeah, what's John Rahm, 14-1 chance? Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't think that the animosity's there, is there? I mean, 12 months ago, there was genuine hate, wasn't there, on both sides? And there was a lot of nastiness, a lot of jibes. But I think there is a general awareness now that they're all going to have to come together at some stage. So, maybe the hate's been taken out of it a little bit, which is a shame for us viewers because we like a bit of spice, don't we? I don't know. I think it's all about Scottie Scheffler. I'm on Scottie Scheffler watch. I just want to know exactly what he's doing. I hope he's not doing much. I hope he's not panicking about anything. He's missed a couple of putts last week, but he had two good putting rounds. Yeah, it's just Scottie Scheffler. And what price Scottie Scheffler goes to, that's all I'm focused on at the moment. Is he going to go to an unbackable price? We're going to get loads of each way terms, loads of enhanced each way terms. James, keep an eye on them. Can you see Scheffler finishing outside the top 10? Can you?
It's a brave person to say no to that, isn't it? With how well he is playing. But like you said, you don't want him to make any sort of silly little tweak to the putting. He's playing fantastically. And I mentioned last week, he's kind of like a even more relaxed Dustin Johnson in kind of his persona. Everything just seems to sort of brush off him. Bar, you said he got a little bit angry last week.
Yeah. He was too angry last week. It didn't matter what happened last week. I wish I could have caddied for him last week and just, well, I would have said, should we just withdraw? After one hole, I would have said, should we withdraw? It's a bit windy. It's not going to do us anything. He just needs to stay calm and stay fresh. And I think he's emphatically the man to be. I don't know whether I'm going to go for him. We'll find out next week. But it depends whether the bookies do further trimming of that price. Because, it's all about the price these days, isn't it?
Indeed. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Steve, for that. Jack Reeve, he will be back next week for you, along with Steve, to preview the one that we just touched on there, the Masters from Augusta National Golf Club, the start of the major season. Don't forget to tune in there next Tuesday. Until then, gamble safely, responsibly, and enjoy the golf. Goodbye.